All right, welcome to the Avery Adventures Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Avery.
And I'm Tanya Avery.
We're still down here at the Western Hunting Expo in Salt Lake City. I kind of wanted to get Phil Mendoza on the podcast because we kind of have announcement to make it's going on Rock Slide. So it's basically Phil is coming on to Rock Slide to help us with our bow hunting. We have a lot of bow hunters and not a lot of quality bow hunting information. If you know Phil and you follow Phil and you know the Alpha Bow Hunting and you know his shop down in Denver, you know that Phil is a legit archer in all sense of the word. Welcome to the show, Phil.
I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
I know you also have a bow shop in Denver. I know it's not in Denver. Where is it at?
It's actually right on the north side of Denver.
Is it?
Yeah, so we were close to the east side of Denver airport for 6.5 years, and we were in our new facility now for about a year and a half on the northeast side of Denver.
And it's a full service with lift lanes to shoot.
Yeah, so we had a huge facility initially, all indoor. We had 40 yards indoor, a bunch of full-time 3D setup. Once we moved into our own facility, we built a facility just for what we're doing. It's not, initially we were renting the space and all that. And so our new facility has 38 lanes full-time at 20 yards. We've got 12 lanes out to 40 yards indoor. We've got a dart system upstairs. We've been in the building a year and a half. We're already going to be expanding the second floor to incorporate more lanes. When we get busy, we get really busy. And this time of year is that. So the indoor wit range is growing. We have an outdoor range there now that sight-in range out to 100 yards, and our 3D range will be operational this spring.
And you sell every facet of, like, the equipment, not necessarily bows, but equipment.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we specialize, I should say, in compound, high-end compound archery. We dabble a little bit in traditional, but we specialize in compound. But we've carried some other gear. You know, we work with Kafaro. We got some Crispy boots in there right now, coolers. Just trying to be more well-rounded as an archery shop should be, we're trying to expand into that.
How did you get into archery? What's your archery background, I guess?
Well, I grew up as a rifle hunter. My dad, we would do the full-on wall tent, 5-7 days, one time a year for big game. And I grew up in that, and I just fell in love with that world. And it was something that I looked forward to that time every year. So once I got out of high school and into college, it wasn't enough anymore, that one trip a year, right? As we all know.
Amen.
So it was a couple years after I got out of college, and it was not to be cocky, but I was shooting a bull in a buck every year with my rifle. And it just got to where it's like, I want to be able to hunt longer, and I want to be able to hunt more time, more season. So I got into archery in my early 20s, and it's been, 15 or so years now, 16 years that I picked up a bow. But I've always been that type of guy that I get obsessed with something.
Uh-huh.
So from the figuring, the shooting and the learning, I would be sitting my TV, watching my TV, and I'd have a target about 8 yards down the hallway. And I was watching TV, and I'd just shoot all night, single guy, not a care. I'd go work out, and I'd just sit in my living room and shoot hundreds of arrows every night.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't think that's cocky at all. I think that's the natural progression of hunters. Yeah. And I think either, you shoot with a rifle. Rifles are generally easy.
Sure.
Easier. Not that they're easy, but they're easier than a bow, than a stick bow, than a compound. Then you can put muzzleloader in there. You can put long-range hunting. But all of that changes the game and the difficulty, I think.
Yeah, and like that when we grew up, it was go sight in your rifle or go check your rifle a couple weeks or a week before season, and then you go hunt. We never really practiced year round. As I got into my teens, I started coyote hunting and other things, just trying to get out more. But when I really took it to the next level was when I picked up a bow, because understanding there is systems in place with a compound that you don't have with traditional equipment, right?
Correct.
There are systems to make you more proficient, to make you more accurate, and understanding those systems on the surface is easy. But once you really want to start going from hitting a paper plate at 20 and 30 yards to hitting a Dixie cup or a solo cup size group at 60 to 80 yards or 100, it's in the details, and eliminating the variables is when you start to get there. So It's just a lot went into it, and I opened my shop, No Limits Archery in Denver. We opened that shop in 2009, March of 2009. So like I said, it'll be 8 years here the next month.
So you see a lot of people shoot, and you set up a lot of their bows. What do you see the most common mistakes in bow setups?
So I would say when we first opened, it was your guy, and I don't want to pick on the older guys, right? But it was a 40 to 50 year old guys that come in with a 30 inch draw length bow, and they're 5'7", 5'8", you know.
Right.
It's like, so I shoot 30 inch.
Pulling back past their head.
Oh yeah. I mean, and that's how they shoot, and their form was bad, and their, you know, their body positioning, everything was wrong. Their alignment was wrong. So I would say early on it was that. More recently, I would say that it's the effect of, and sorry, my son's here.
He is perfectly fine.
He's always with me, man. He loves to shoot and everything, and he's been shooting since he's three.
And so he ran the 3K or the 5K with you this morning.
He ran the 5K. Yeah, he's all in, man. But we going back to, I guess, the current problems. Technology has opened a lot of doors for us as hunters, and with our equipment, and enabling us to shoot further or be more proficient, dial things in. And I think that hunters are leaning on that too much. We talked a little bit ago on the interview I did with you. Hunting instinct is pinnacle, right?
Amen.
Or
I agree with that 100%.
At least it's amongst 1A or 1B. So what people are forgetting is they've got this equipment that can maybe allow you to shoot 100, 120 yards. But they're forgetting what hunting is and closing the distance and, you know, stalking or understanding when to move, when not to move. Like you mentioned, wind direction, just the habitat, understanding right. When deer or elk are going to move. All that stuff that goes into hunting, I think, is getting overlooked because of technology giving us the ability to handicap ourselves. I don't know. You know, I think it's that.
Do you see guys, because just on my side, most people listen to this podcast know I shoot a stick bow and I shoot a long-range rifle. And the one thing I do like about a stick bow is it does make me pay attention more. I'm not going to lie. There is some difficulty in the long-range side because you have to watch animals so long. So you do learn a lot of animal behavior that actually helps you on the stick bow side.
Sure.
But I like the solitude of I got a stick and a string and I don't have any sights and I got to close the distance and kill whatever animal I'm hunting. So, but on that note, when people come into your shop with, I guess my question is I hear a lot of times that bows are set up wrong. What are other people, not knocking on their pros or other pro shops, but what are people coming in with problems?
So, understanding how your equipment works is one thing that causes problems. So let's just say, sorry, coughing in the mic here.
You're okay.
Been talking a lot today, running my mouth. I'm good at running my mouth.
Me too, man. That's always actually my best quality, Phil. She could concur with that, can't you?
No, it's good.
You have
good.
A lot of great qualities, babe.
So when you see someone that's just getting started, that, you know, and this is where I started, it's like, you know what? I want that $300 to $500 bow. I don't want to go all in, $1,000, $1,500, and you get it at a box store. And I hope that the guys that are working at box stores aren't taking this as a knock, but they're also learning as how to work on a bow, just as somebody is learning to shoot a bow, right?
They're learning as they go.
Exactly.
Okay.
And there's a lot of turnover in that type of that job, that profession, I guess, in sporting goods stores. So when somebody comes in, you're at a box store, they're taught to grab off the shelf, change the draw length, out the door, right? Some manufacturers will send a bow even partially set up. So your D-loop positioning may be wrong. Once you start changing draw lengths, your cam synchronization is off once you start doing that. So there's so many things that the bow got shipped at 29 inches, but you just put it in a 27-inch person's hand or draw length's hand, and you didn't recheck your cam synchronization. So now the top cam is hitting way off from the bottom cam. So right out the gate, you're starting wrong, right?
Right.
Second to that, you know, somebody may want to upgrade their rest or something, and I'm not trying to put all the blame on a pro shop. I'm just saying that once you understand that your bow is designed a certain way, and it will perform most efficiently when it's tuned properly, when the cams are synced properly, when everything is in sync, when the arrows are in sync with the bow and the shooter meshes with that combination. So one thing I like to do is when you buy a bow from our shop, for example, and I'm not trying to, a shameless plug, right? But you buy a bow from our shop, obviously we specialize in high end, but we also give people usually a multiple visit pass to come back and shoot, because every bowstring and cables, They're going to settle sometimes 50, sometimes 100 shots, 150 shots. After that process, you should go through everything again.
Right.
And so that's one thing that just – in addition to that, making sure that somebody's posture, somebody's alignment, maybe they changed their anchor point, and now that – that went from you being on the borderline of being a 29 in straw to, you know what, you should be a 28, you know. So let's tweak the D-loop. Let's get your draw link proper and get you in a comfortable position, because comfort and, again, that chemistry of you with your bow, when you find that right chemistry, that's when you're going to be most effective.
Nice stuff.
So Phil, I don't shoot a bow, but I'm not opposed to it. Does that all of those elements also change when they start to pull back more weight?
Yes.
Like every change affects everything.
Yes.
Is what I'm understanding. Is that correct?
100%. So you're using muscles in archery or to shoot archery equipment that you don't use in a lot of other areas of life, you know? So someone that comes in, it cracks me up all the time, because I've got Bo, one of my main guys at the shop, he's 150 pounds soaking wet, right? 5'8", maybe. Kid, he's more technical than I am, and I really like him working with me, because when I know I need something done on my bow, he's a guy I was like, Bo, I don't have time, man, fix this for me, you know. But anyway, going back to that, this kid, he's young, and we get 80-pound bows, 85-pound bows in the shop every once in a while, and they'll look at him, and they're like, hey, I need this worked on, and they're like, they look at him like, you're not drawing that bow back, you know, and it's just smooth as butter, boom, draw it back. Help him paper tune, help him do whatever we need to do. And it's learning the most effective way to draw a bow, and then having the big muscular guys come in the shop and they're like, I want an 80-pound bow. And we don't even really stock 80-pound bows, just because it's almost a custom order.
Do they say they want the Snyder special?
some guys do. You know, some guys come in that are the Snyder followers that they see what he is, and hey, he gets it done, you know.
Right.
But no, some people they definitely overestimate what they can do initially, and that leads to poor form, poor shot execution, and then them not being accurate and maybe quitting. So being able to grow, work up into draw weight once you've started with good form, good posture, and being set up properly will lend itself to let you increase weight faster.
So how often do you recommend like somebody to come in once they've started to check and make sure everything's still aligned and still working for them?
Yeah. So manufacturers are telling us that you should be changing your string and cables every 2 to 3 years, okay, depending on how you cycle it, depending on how you care for it. So at a bare minimum, every 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
I would encourage people to come in a couple times a year, because a bow checkup, a basic tune, might cost you $20 to $40, depending on what your pro shop's going to charge you. But if something's begin to come out of whack, then you may not know it right away. It might be something that's going to incrementally get worse. And you could realize that something's wrong at that moment in time when it's animals in front of you.
Right.
You know, when you're in a high-pressure situation, mm-hmm, that's when everything's magnified. And if something on your setup has just been slowly working its way loose or out of time or something, that worst time, mm-hmm, to find that out. So I encourage people twice a year.
Okay.
Get your bow checked up twice a year, and that way – sometimes you may change string and cables at a year and a half. Some people can get by with 2.5-3 years, you know.
No. I've noticed on the female side of it that there's a lot more female archers, yeah, it seems like. So I imagine that the bow companies have noticed. Is there a lot more? From when I shot a compound was back in, like, I think 2001 or 2 is the last time I shot one. There really wasn't a lot of women bows. I see there's a lot more archers, female archers. There must be a lot more product for females.
Yeah. For years, you know, some of the manufacturers just wanted to throw a pink string on a bow or a pink, you know, accessory and call it a women's bow.
Right.
And it worked to some extent. But, yes, there is the industry is understanding the growth of women in hunting, and it's great. And we have a lot of women shooters, and I actually have a couple women on staff that help out, because sometimes a woman wants to talk to a woman, right?
Absolutely.
Because us guys – and not everyone, but – sometimes it's better to be heard from a lady that's already doing it.
Right.
So on the equipment side, there is definitely some more attention being paid to detail from the manufacturers, from arrows to just, you know, aesthetics to even fit and finish. I mean, a feel issue from the lady's perspective. So it's good to see. The hunting industry is just, it's a good time right now.
All right, this is a no BS question. Who shoots better, women or men? On average.
I'm going to tell you that women learn better. Okay,
I agree with that.
So there's a lot of times where, you know, guys will come to me. They're like, "Can you give my wife a lesson? She doesn't listen to me. She don't, you know."
we understand.
We have
this.
That
we actually,
same problem.
We actually have to have an interpreter, which is one of his hunting friends. That will Ryan will tell me something, and I don't understand what he's saying. So then the friend will interpret it.
He's that a mediator.
He'll
break it down. And apparently, I'm not a good communicator. So
no. Yeah, I would say, like I said, women learn better. If you're talking about true score, typically men score better at the higher level, right? But from everybody in the middle, you can mix a really good shooter in the women's side and the men's side, and scores are going to be comparable, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would just say that on archery's highest level, men are probably proven to be a little bit better. But seeing the growth, that may change soon.
Honestly, if I didn't have Ryan, I'm sure that I would shoot a bow instead of a gun, because to me, if you're learning something new and you're not, you know, haven't been around it, a bow is less intimidating because there's, you don't have to understand calibers. And I mean, to that extent, there's just.
And there's no loud boom. That's probably positive
that's,
too.
That's intimidating to girls, I think.
It's one of those things that, you know, I've done a lot of my content, that whether it's podcasts or video, and I try to find that balance to where beginner to intermediate and the people that want more. And a lot of times the women are the ones that are more in tune with understanding this is what causes this, so this is what I need to work on. But that balance of some people just want to be in the middle, right? And they're content with being in the middle. And that's okay, because trying to shoot an animal at 30 yards or 35, 40 yards, if that's good enough for them, that's okay. The people, once you start getting into the long-range shooting, right? Rifle shooting, archery shooting, being super technical, that's when you start seeing those people excel in score, excel in, you know, maybe filling tags and everything. But, you know, I don't know. It's something that from your standpoint, Tanya, it's women enjoy it. It's a this activity is more of a discipline, more of a, you know, it's. But it's also got a feeling of calmness and mm-hmm. and easing the mind. I used to love. I mean, I still work two jobs, right? But when I was just working the one job, and I'd have a shitty day, you know, it's just it today sucked. I'm gonna go shoot my bow,
right?
And sometimes I'd even be like the guys at the gym. I'd put the headset in and I'd be on the range shooting just because I don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah, right. That is a very calming effect with archery for some reason.
It is
very calming. On the note, on the women's side, what bow would you suggest for a female?
Okay, buddy. Okay. On the women's side, so here, it depends on so many things. And this is when somebody comes into the shop, we try to identify, are you looking to be in the field hunting? Are you wanting to just be a hobbyist shooting for target? Are you? So there's a lot of variables that you need to understand what they want to get out of it first. And then second to that, understanding price range, right? Pocketbook's a big issue.
Right.
So I shoot Hoyt myself, but I like that Hoyt has, like, for example, a carbon bow on a smaller cam family for a lady that's in that 24 to 25-inch draw length range, 26-inch draw length. They have a cam system that's efficient for a shorter person, shorter wingspan, lightweight bow. Women don't like a big, heavy, clunky thing, especially right out the gate. So I like a carbon that's fitted right. The other thing, there's some other bows on the market that, you know, Elite's come out, some great stuff. PSC has a lot of great bows. I mean, we do really well with PSC with what they have in the shop. Prime's another great company. Each bow company, I think Prime's got the, what's it called, the Hybrid Air. I'm not even sure, honestly. I mean, there's 50 new bow names.
Bunch coming out.
Every year,
sure,
right? But
yeah.
But they've got a lighter weight bow. So they're starting to understand that mass weight is an issue for women, or a concern. I shouldn't say an issue. Mass weight is a concern, and having that smooth as smooth of a draw as they can, but be as efficient as they can. But because you know, bows get speed gets something that's thrown around all over the place with archery, and what a lot of guys don't understand, they'll come in the shop and they'll say, I've got a 340 IBO rated bow, but they're a 28-inch draw length shooting a 450 grain arrow. It's like, why is my bow doing 260? You know, and so with the women, with the ladies, if their draw length is 27 or 28 inch, you're losing 10 to 12 feet per second every inch shorter than you go from the IBO specs. And then once your arrow weight comes into play. So there's, you need to have a well-performing bow, efficient bow for women. So it's a loaded question just because, like I said, hunting, not hunting. Target, you know, a size of a young lady is also very important.
So basically they need to go to a pro shop and they need to be like a qualified buyer what they're doing.
Yeah, because I can put, if I have a lady that comes in, I can put two or three bows in her hand and then say, okay, let's go in the tunnel, the demo tunnel, and then you can start shooting them. We have people demo shoot our bows with no sights on them, basic rest, because I don't care. The bows are accurate. I don't care if we've got a sight on there and you're smacking arrows at 5 yards. Who cares?
Right.
I want you to know what it feels like to draw the bow back. I want you to know what it feels like at full draw. And do you like this one is quieter than that one, or this one had maybe a little more hand shock, or the grip is too fat. So you start to be able to identify what a person is wanting or what they're liking, and then push them in the direction that they're going to be more successful at.
I always want to ask you this. Last time I talked to you on a podcast with you and
Will.
How many times does a bow get dry fired in your shop? I always want to ask you that, and I forgot.
We run a real big 3D league on Wednesday nights, and ton of great people. But we went on a span where it was like a dry fire night, if not two, on 3D league, and people get excited, right? There's 40, 50 people on the line. You got animal. We sometimes have the music turned up a little bit, and people get a little bit distracted, a little bit excited, and pretty soon they're at full draw. Bang! So it's a very distinct noise. I would say that there's sometimes where we go months where we don't hear it, and there's times where you'll hear it three times in a week.
So they forget to put an arrow in.
Yeah, most of the time.
Most of the time?
Most of the time.
So, I don't know. Compound here, I don't know. How many of those bows live through that?
Few. On a compound bow, the cams are designed to fail first, right? I mean, they're small aluminum. It's not. I mean, some of the parts are metal. Some of the parts are, depending on the manufacturer. Even some of the mods used to even be plastic on some of the modules on bows, right?
Really?
So you'll get a dry fire if it's on the 60 to 70 pound pull weight range. Usually your cams will bend. If not, it'll come derailed. And sometimes if the string gets clogged up in a cam, it'll tear the string. So strings and cams are usually going to fail first. And then the limbs will fail potentially next. But some of them, you'd be surprised, a 30 to 40-pound bow, you can get away with a couple of dry fires.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
I don't know if a lot of people know this. Some probably do, some probably don't. But Phil's also a train-to-hunt champion.
Former, yes. Yeah.
Well, former, you're still a train-to-hunt champion. I saw you on the hike, the Mountain Ops hike the other day, Mountain Ops Kafaru hike.
Yeah.
You charged up the hill, and you were in the top four or five, were you not?
Yeah, no, we stay in shape. Obviously, you know Snyder. I mean, we got a good group of guys that work out, and I work out those guys as much as I can. But we take our off season very seriously, you know.
Absolutely.
Train to Hunt is an event that I enjoy doing. I've done quite a few of them, and it's it gave me an outlet to be competitive with something that I'm involved in every day. So it was a good. It's been a good platform, I guess you might say, but no, I enjoy it, man. You, like I said, we practice what we preach, so.
Right. Oh, Snyder's involved. You're definitely moving along.
Yeah.
So on the, you gave me a kind of a poll question. I got one for you.
Okay.
Do you think for a Western backcountry hunter, is physical fitness more important or mental toughness? Because that word is thrown around a lot. Mental toughness. What do you think?
Mental toughness, 100%.
I agree.
100%. So obviously sheep hunting a couple years ago and then mule deer hunting in some of the same country last year. That country is enough to break some people to where they may not even hunt. They'll hike halfway in and they'll say, you know what, this is too hard. I'm coming back out, you know. They're
right.
Physically able to move in and out, but it's their mind that let them down at that point, you know. So, yeah, man, I was a guy in high school we did powerlifting and a lot of sports, and our coaches really hammered that they would try to break you. You know, we had different things that we do in practices that it was for a greater purpose, and I'm appreciative of that. You know, some of my coaches growing up, like I said, they were they were assholes, just to put it lightly.
Right.
But, and my dad was hard, man. My dad was super hard on me growing up. But I appreciate every minute of it now.
I always think about one builds the other.
Yeah.
You cannot have one without the other, no. I think. So you have to be, truthfully, if I didn't hunt, I type on a desk, I type on a computer almost all day long, I'd be 350 pounds, Phil.
Yeah.
But I do have a lot of, I believe, I mean, I think I have mental toughness. So, you know, I don't quit. Obviously, you don't quit.
I don't like to, man.
No, that the deer story you told me and the sheep you shot, that obviously shows a whole lot of mental toughness.
No, it does. And that's, like I said, I can really, I can just attest that to my dad first and foremost. I mean, with all this political stuff lately, and I don't like to talk about I don't like to personally talk about politics because my dad was illegal from Mexico when he came to this country, right? He came in the early 70s. Right now, he owns 4 companies, pays more taxes than most people I know. One of the most successful businessmen that I know. And it's because when he did what it took and then some, you know. And watching that, a lot of people tell me, they're like, man, when do you sleep? And it's like, you know what? My dad slept less than I did,
right?
You know. So if he did it, there's no, you know, I can do it 100%. And it's one of those things that I feel that I've been fortunate to grow up in the household that I did, because we grew up with a hard upbringing, and we didn't have a lot growing up. And I look back on that today. So I just feel like I can appreciate things a little bit more.
Yeah, and I don't know who quoted, but he says, you can never fake hard work.
Yeah.
And it's absolute truth. So alpha bow hunting, tell me what that's all about, Phil.
So alpha bow hunting started, we had an event called the Alpha Bow Hunting Challenge in 2016. I've competed in tournament archery for many years. I mean, I started shooting a bow, and then within the first couple, 2 or 3 years, I start seeing these local shoots at clubs, and I just immediately got hooked. Started competing nationally a few years later, and I earned my way up into the pro class after, I think it was 6 years of shooting ASA. And so I only competed there for a short time, but at that point is when I kind of found Train to Hunt and started doing those competitions. So I've done a ton of tournaments, and I've been able to learn a lot of different games. So what I just cherry picked some of the best things that I liked from different games, and I created my own.
Awesome.
You know, it's America, right? Do what you got to do. Make if you feel you can do something better, well, step up and do it.
Awesome. So what is it?
So the Alpha Bow Hunting Challenge is, we have an event that's, it has a qualifying round. So you've got a 25-target qualifying round. We're shooting bow hunter-type scenario targets, where we're doing, it's all marked yardage. So we're doing real-life scenarios. So, for example, you can walk up to a stake at our qualifying round, and I'm going to have a wolf target at 30 yards, I'm going to have a wolf target at 40 yards, and I'm going to have a wolf target at 50 yards. Okay, you're going to walk up, and you're going to say, the 30-yard target scores normal, 12, 10, 8. Outside of the 8 ring, we score negative 3. We penalize for wounds. Okay, so that's my scoring system. But you can walk and say, okay, for 10 yards further, it's a +1 bonus. So any scoring ring you hit, because it's further out, you're going to get a bonus. You can shoot at the 50-yard target for 2+ bonus points. So it's a par plus-plus game. So there's many scenario shots where if your proficiency level allows you to shoot a higher risk target, you're going to get rewarded for it. So there's a lot of that in there. We're doing a lot of kneeling shots, seated shots, awkward angled shots, to where I'm putting you in as many situations as I can to get you ready for a hunting scenario. There is nothing that you can do to simulate hunting other than hunting.
Right.
We know that. So, but what we're trying to do in our game is just open your eyes and give you as many options as we can to put you in there. So that the 25 target qualifier round, we do a lot of bow hunter scenario shots. After that, we take everybody's score and we put you from first to last in your respective division. After that, it's head to head bracket format in our we've got a mirror image. What is similar to a pistol rifle competition course, right? So we've got 5 targets. 2 shooters start right in the center. It's timed. They move away from each other. They have a mild physical obstacle element in between each shot. What my goal with this is to increase your heart rate, simulate you shooting with an increased heart rate, and do it in a fun manner. As soon as I say go, I got a DJ in the background. He's I mean, we got music cranking in the stereo, you know. So you see guys getting pumped up for some event, sporting events, and they got their headphones in. We're doing that for you here, you know. We're putting you right in front of everybody. We shoot at clay pigeon targets for our bullseye, so it's an instant gratification if you break or you miss. We penalize you for misses on the time, and it's an event. That round on our alpha course takes anywhere from 2.5 to 3.5 minutes, depending on your physical level, and it's just a lot of fun. So then we do an adjusted time based off how many targets you hit or missed, and then you move in up in the bracket. So it's fun to watch. It happens quick. The action is nonstop, and we're gonna reward people this year big time to come play our game. It's something that I'm really excited about. So we're getting behind that.
How many events do you have, and where can you find those events?
So alphabowhunting.com is the website. We've got 4 events this year. They're all in Colorado. 3 in Denver, 1's going to be on the West Slope by Glenwood Springs in Newcastle. In 2018, we're looking to expand. Right now, I've got a verbal commitment from Wyoming. We're going to look into Utah and either New Mexico or Arizona. So I'm going to, at the end of the day, the finals will be at my shop at No Limits Archery. I mean, I built that outdoor range with this game in mind.
Awesome.
Right? So nice. that's what we're going to be doing there. In, like I said, the information, alphabowhunting.com. Alpha Bow Hunting on Instagram, YouTube, whole nine yards.
That's awesome. I think that's a better way to do it if you have an actual, you know, you kind of psych them out. You kind of have options. You have to deal with the devil.
Yeah. Well, and so, for example, this last year, I had a elk target, big elk target, and it was like 64, 65 yards. You know, so one of the shot scenarios, you come up, and I had a judge at the stake. It's like, okay, you can judge this target and shoot it for a +4 bonus because now it's a lot longer target and you're judging the target, and or you can shoot it for mark yardage for par points. And I tell you what, it was funny to see because you start making people think at the moment that they have to shoot,
right?
And they're either going to excel or they're going to not do so well.
Stress does funny things.
Yes.
It is. It's surprising too how people that you think will handle it really well and they just crumple.
Yeah, I've seen it time and time again in military, sports, hunting, and I've done it myself. I've folded like a lawn chair, man.
Yeah. So. No, well, and me too. And that's, I wrote a short book on buck fever, a few months back. And this event, the Alpha Bow Hunting Challenge and that book and everything really spawned from some scenarios that happened to me in the field over the last 5-7 years. And I would say that I wouldn't say that I have buck fever now. I still deal with a little bit of nerves and anxiety like anybody when you get excited.
Right.
But some of the things that started helping me were when you sit there and you actually – when you can take yourself away from the heat of the moment of truth, everything, being overtaken by the emotion, and you start putting your mind to think again,
right,
you put yourself back in control, right?
Yeah.
And it's something that it's funny because – I missed that first ram on that hunt with Snyder, right?
And I remember.
To tell you how I felt when I have two of my buddies out there in the field, sucking with me with that suck fest of hiking up and down those mountains.
In one
right?
of the worst places in the continent to hunt.
And we get a very respectable ram, and we waited. We moved all day to get in the position for this ram, and a distance that I was very proficient at. And I shoot over this ram, and I'm like dumbfounded, you know. So then I start working backwards and analyzing it, and then I went to go into a cut chart. So going to that cut chart, long story short, second time on that ram, on a different ram, I peek over, I check the range, and I refer back to my cut chart. So now I'm doing math in my head. I'm focusing on what I need to do. I tell myself, okay, split the 30 and 40 pin. I draw back, and I put it on it. So I was still in the moment, but I wasn't overtaken by the moment at that point. And that's what I want to be able to encourage people to remember is with this type of game is I'm going to put a target in front of you, and I might even put money on the line. You know, this is a money target. This is a cash target. Make your decision wisely.
I actually watched one of your videos with the nickel.
Yes, standing nickel on his side.
I did. I like the guy that you thought I was in the box and put it in the little crease.
You put it in the crack. Yeah, man. The street challenges, all that stuff. I've got a great community that comes around the shop, and we talked before, I want to turn the camera around and showcase a lot of the people that come in, because that crowd, it's you got all kinds, man. You got all kinds, and there's great people, and you learn from something from everybody, and it's just been fun. I'm having fun.
Where do you find that book?
Right now, it's on Amazon. Just notice to people, edition one is out right now on Amazon. Okay. I've got another chapter that I'm adding to that book. It's going to be on the second edition.
It called? For
Targeting Buck Fever.
Targeting Buck Fever.
By Phil Mendoza. We went up right around Christmas time. I went up with that book. It did really well initially. So I'm really happy with its initial response. But having read through it, I'm putting the audio version up on my website, alphabowhunting.com. But having read through it now and getting it ready for an audio format, there was a little bit more I needed to add to that. Right. Okay, because it's a short read. It's 80 pages or so on it. It's not a long book, right? I'm a bow hunter. I'm short attention span. I wasn't going to put a 200-page, 300-page book. Right. So, but anyway, having read through it.
You got lots of pictures?
I do have pictures in there.
Good, because that's the kind of shit I need.
I do have pictures. So the audio format that I'm going to load is going to be edition two. And then I'm going to go back and catch everything else up on Amazon. So,
nice.
Yeah.
All right. So Rockslide, I own rockslide.com, me and Robbie Denning. Gear-driven website. I know you're a backcountry hunter. What is in Phil Mendoza pack on every hunt?
My pack? You want like one item or just...
No, just what your top items. You're going to go hunting for more than 2 days. What's in that? I know you use a Kefaru.
Yep.
So what's in that Kefaru pack and what Kefaru pack generally is it?
You know, Kefaru pack. I usually hunt with an AMR. That's kind of my, you know, especially when you're having to pack some meat out, right? I mean, anybody can go in with a lightweight pack, but if you're not ready to bring something out, then you're not getting the whole experience.
Yeah, what are you there for?
Right.
Exactly.
So AMR on the hunting side, when I'm scouting, I actually got to run a prototype for the Reckoning before that one came out. So that pack I really enjoyed. But in my pack, I tell you what, man, one of the most essential things I keep is my archery repair kit. It goes with me everywhere, right?
Yes.
And that's something that we'll work together all. I'll put a video on Rockside for you there on some of the necessities that you never know when you might need something, right? And some of the bare necessities, certain levels to just double check your sight in case you bumped it, stuff like that. So I've got a little kit that is, you know, a little 4-inch by 4-inch pouch. That's in whether I'm day hunting or I'm backcountry hunting, that's in my pack all the time. And then I love to eat, man.
Yeah, me too. You can tell.
You talk to Braden and Aaron. These guys kept looking back every once in a while. They see me eating. So I would say that, yeah, the gear, we've talked about that, you know, and the other thing. Gear is important. You know, I run as high-end gear as I can afford and that I can use. But I think that more important to that is my kit for repair kit in case I need it with my archery stuff, and then making sure I get fueled right with my food. So I snack a lot.
So you have a hell of a snack pack.
Man, when people start talking about how much does your food weigh, and don't ask me that question, man. I'm over of your normal parameters of how much you should be carrying every day, because I know that when I get hungry, that's the first thing that's going to alter my mood and weaken my mindset is when I'm not eating right. So
I agree with that. You got to be happy.
Yep.
Do you follow on the Snyder Arrow 14,000 arrows you bring into the backcountry?
I learned that.
I got to take a dozen or I'm done.
Yeah, man. It was funny cuz we had again, missing that ram, missing a second time on that ram, shooting arrows at marmots, shooting arrows at a rock to confirm that it was my sight was on. We had to walk off the mountain cuz I had one arrow left, you know. And we had spotted what we thought was the biggest ram that we saw on that trip. And I didn't feel comfortable going after it because I had one arrow in my quiver.
You know, that is one of the pluses with a stick bow. You can usually just pick them back up, dust them off, and fire them again.
Couldn't do it anymore when they were smashing rocks.
Not with the compound.
So, yeah, I'm an 8 to 12 guy in the backcountry for sure.
I always ask people this because it's kind of people don't think about how much water you generally take on those hunts. Because I know Colorado's a dry place.
Yeah. You know, in that country specifically, where water was very, especially when we're sitting up high and hanging out on ridges and water's down below, you know, the Nalgene's right. I mean, you got 32 roughly ounces in there. I'm usually drinking 3.5 of these to 4 a day. So I've got the 5 liter. I've got a big, water bladder pouch that I run on there for food, and then I've got this. So staying hydrated, especially when you're up there 12.5, 13.5, man, it's important.
You're working hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So.
So if you guys figured it out, Phil's going to come on to Rock Slide with his Alpha Bow Hunting and have at least monthly article video posted up, because we have a big bow hunting fraction, whatever the word is, yeah, on our website. We have a big base of bow hunters that I don't think are getting enough information from us. So I don't know how I didn't think of Phil earlier, but Phil's going to start coming on and throwing down big tips.
Yeah, no, we had mentioned before, right now I'm doing about every couple of weeks, I'm doing an actual just strictly shooting tips or equipment or something type of video. You know, I try to highlight other stuff that we do from our shop, but moving forward with that, it's something that it's funny, because we had talked about different skill levels and understanding what people need. And I'm just going to kind of bounce back and forth from the beginner to the intermediate to the advanced and float around the spectrum, because I know there's value to different people in different areas. And if there's ever something somebody says, hey, can you elaborate on this more, or can you touch on right. that, send it over. I'm going to be checking in, you know, at least once a week, if not more, on those forums and on the videos and the stuff we post up, and just try to be a regular positive contributor, because you guys do a great job. I don't want to be the short end of the stick on your guys' platform. You know, you guys have a great following there.
No, and I think that's the best part you said there. He's going to do whatever he's going to do, a video, article. It doesn't matter. It's going to be great. And then we're going to have a place where you can ask him questions. But I want to emphasize, he's going to answer when he can. He's not going to answer every day. He's a busy man. He's running about, like you said, running two jobs. So he'll put your question up, be reasonable. Give him a few weeks to respond sometimes. I know how it goes.
Yeah, no, I've got content ready to go here in the next month. I've already got that kind of mapped out and some of those videos started. So definitely, shoot some questions across if there's something that comes about, because here's the deal that I want people to know about me. I don't know everything. I've learned a lot. And if there's something I don't know, I've developed a community of people that I also lean on, or we lean on each other. I'll gladly do what I can to find the right answer, because I'm not gonna lie to you. You know, if somebody says, hey, what about this, and I don't know, I'm not gonna lie about it. You know, so I'll try to figure it out. We don't sell every bow line in the shop. That's the other thing. We sell most of the high end bows. So if there's a specific equipment question to a certain bow and we don't sell it, I don't want to, we'll do the best we can.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Okay, so. Last question. 200-inch mule deer, 400-inch elk. Which one's Phil going after?
So I have a mule deer that I've never scored that I think's touching 200. Okay, rifle kill many years ago. I have my biggest elk is shot in the 320 range. So elk for me.
All right, Phil, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. We'll have you on again.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Thank you, Phil.
All right.